Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On October 7th, 2020, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Ford Motor Company v. Montana 8th Judicial District Court, a case consolidated with Ford Motor Company v. Bandemer. The issue before the court was whether the arise out of or relate to requirement for a state court to exercise specific personal jurisdiction over a non-resident defendant under Burger King Corporations v. Rudzewitz is met when none of the defendant's forum contacts cause the plaintiff's claim, such that the plaintiff's claims would be the same even if the defendant had no forum contacts. Karen Harned, Executive Director at the National Federation of Independent Business Small Business Legal Center, and Jamie A. Santos, partner at Goodwin Proctor LLP, join us today to discuss this case's oral argument.
Giving you some background about the two cases. There were two cases that were consolidated for oral arguments, and I'll give you some idea about the parties' arguments. So here's a condensed version of the facts. So Ford Motor Company, they're the petitioners in the case. Ford is headquartered in Michigan, incorporated in Delaware, and the company was sued in two cases in Montana and Minnesota. Both of those cases involved people who claimed injuries from car crashes that happened in Montana and Minnesota. Ford did not assemble or manufacture those cars in those states, and the plaintiffs didn't buy those cars in those states either. Instead, Ford sold the cars to independent dealerships in other states, and the cars ended up in Montana and Minnesota after numerous private sales that Ford wasn't a part of, eventually making their way to Montana and Minnesota, where they allegedly resulted in injuries to the two plaintiffs who were the respondents in this case. And to be clear, this case is about specific personal jurisdiction, and the first prong of specific personal jurisdiction is purposeful availment or purposeful direction, and Ford did not contest that it had satisfied, that prong was satisfied. The company has a bunch of forum-related contacts in Montana and Minnesota in general. So it sells vehicles to independent dealerships in those states. It advertises nationally and so forth. What it contested was the second prong of specific personal jurisdiction, whether the claims arose out of or were related to those forum-related contacts. And since Ford's position was essentially that specific personal jurisdiction exists only if the defendant's conduct that occurs in or is targeted at the forum state actually gave rise to the specific plaintiff's claims. And they say that since the vehicles at issue were not sold in Montana or Minnesota, there was no manufacturing activity that was related, there was no related advertising or anything along those lines, the vehicles were only brought into Montana and Minnesota through the unilateral decisions of prior owners who weren't even parties to the case. The personal injury claims did not give rise to the specific plaintiff's claims. Ford says that for a plaintiff to assert claims for manufacturing defect in Montana, it's not enough that it markets and sells other Ford vehicles in Montana if the plaintiff's vehicle wasn't manufactured there, designed there, or sold there by Ford. And Ford argues that any other rule would be inconsistent with recent Supreme Court cases about specific personal jurisdiction, including its 2017 decision in Bristol-Myers Squibb versus Superior Court of California. That case held that just because plaintiffs who were sold pills by BMS in California could sue BMS there, that doesn't mean that other plaintiffs who were sold pills by BMS in other states could sue there. And that was the case even though all of the claims were similar, the injuries were similar, and the product was exactly the same. Now, the plaintiffs say that this case is different from BMS because the plaintiffs in BMS weren't California residents and they weren't injured in California. And what we'll talk about at oral argument is that's a distinction that Justice Kagan drew as well. But what Ford's counsel, Sean Murata, emphasized in briefing and during the argument is that that argument that this case is different because the plaintiffs were residents of Montana and Minnesota and were injured there, that argument runs smack into the court's decision in another case called Walden versus Fiore. And Walden held that the plaintiff's contacts with the forum are irrelevant to this jurisdictional question. What matters is the defendant's contacts. So basically what you have in this case is what Ford's counsel argued, BMS plus Walden, that does not equal a win for plaintiffs. Now, the plaintiff's arguments on the merits, I should mention it has changed a bit since the cert stage. So when the plaintiffs filed briefs opposing Ford's cert petition, they advocated for what's called a stream of commerce theory of specific personal jurisdiction. They basically said that if a company places a product into the stream of commerce from wherever in the United States, and they have the purpose of serving a particular state, and they expect that those products will be purchased by people in those states or will make their way to those states, then that's enough to satisfy the due process clause. On the merits, once the court granted cert, the plaintiffs ran away from that theory. And instead, they argued a different test. They said that if Ford cultivates a market in a particular forum for a particular product, and then there's an injury involving that product in that market, then the company is subject to the jurisdiction of that state, no matter whether the injury occurred as a result of that cultivation and no matter how the product involved in the lawsuit actually got to the state. And there are some amicus briefs that continued to endorse that stream of commerce theory. But when the plaintiff's counsel was asked about it at oral argument, he told the court that it didn't need to reach that question. So that's the general background about the parties and the arguments. And I should mention that there's been a wide variety of amicus participation in the case. The United States filed a brief that was largely in favor of Ford. And interestingly, it asked for oral argument time, and the court unusually denied that request. Also, a number of industry groups filed amicus briefs on Ford's side as well, including a brief that I filed on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation and the General Aviation Manufacturers Association. There were also a considerable number of amicus briefs filed in support of the plaintiffs, including several briefs that were filed by law professors. There was a brief filed by 40 state attorneys general, and there was a brief filed by the National Association of Home Builders. So there are interesting coalitions on the different sides. So Karen, how do you think the argument went? I'm curious what you noticed and maybe what surprised you.
Well, thank you, Jamie, and thank you everyone for attending this call. I thought that the argument was interesting in a number of respects. First of all, I do think there wasn't as much discussion of the underlying case law as we thought that we might see that Jamie just listed in the background. Perhaps that's because they didn't need to worry about it because they'd already considered it, although Breyer did admit in argument that he was going to go back and read it. So I'm not – it would be interesting to know how much preparation they did do on this case prior to argument because they had the Google case before, which ran over and has been much in the press. I think the other thing that was interesting to me was you know, Thomas and Alito and Gorsuch were all very interested. Well, I'd say pulling back from that you have, it seemed like the justices on both sides were very interested in what would be quote unquote fair. And they were looking at it from different perspectives, I think. I would assume that the more liberal justices are maybe going to do more of a results-oriented analysis of that. But I thought that it was interesting that Thomas and Alito and Gorsuch were all trying to get it back to first principles and what are we doing here with the due process clause. And in one of his earliest questions of the defense attorney, Mr. Mariotta, Justice Thomas, you know, he said that he thought that the proximate cause test that Ford was putting forward was really a long journey, he said, from the due process clause, and wanted that further explained. And I don't know that he ever felt like he was satisfied on how far Ford got there. So, Jamie, I'd be curious to hear what you think in response to that. Alito at one point, I think, really kind of acknowledged that, or at least he saw the law in this regard as kind of a mess and not clear. One of the big hypos that kept on coming up was with regards to, well, so first, before I say that, I should say there, Jamie mentioned that the home builders had filed a brief in this case. They argued that the court should take the stream of commerce theory. They pointed out at the very beginning of their brief that all businesses are not going to see this case alike. And for their members who primarily operate intrastate, if Ford were to win, they would end up, and they said they already see this in practice, they would end up being, you know, the first to be sued in many of these cases. It would then be up to that home builder to bring in the Fords of the world or whoever the manufacturer of their product was into the suit. I can speak from the small businesses I represent that, you know, as a practical matter, that wouldn't happen in many instances. But I guess what they were basically trying to say is, you know, it leaves them on the hook. They also had an interesting point that really didn't present in the facts of this case, in which a lot of their products that they're sourcing for their housing is coming from countries that can't be brought into American, you know, companies that are from abroad and can't be brought into American court or even figured out who they were, like the maker of drywall in China that they end up using in a house. So they had an interesting and unique perspective, but I thought it was, what I thought most telling about it was that's a typical quote unquote business group that would, you would think would side on the side of Ford, but they came in on the other side. They definitely resonated. Gupta, who represented the plaintiffs, called them out and their brief out in his introductory remarks. And throughout the argument, there were hypotheticals that were peppered in that were dealing with this issue of, you know, the small business owner. You know, I think it was Roberts had one in Maine, and what if he advertises just in, you know, New Jersey because he wants to hit that market, but it goes viral and somebody in New York buys his product, and now does that, you know, small little Etsy person from Maine have to defend himself in New York, even though he didn't intend to market his product in New York. There was Justice Thomas's example of, which I think, well, anyway, so that's one with regards to how does this cut? How does it cut for the smaller versus the big? And I think also there's a distinction between industries like a home builder versus a manufacturer, because the small manufacturer that's an American manufacturer is going to be probably, I would think, more on the side of Ford than on the side of the home builders, who, again, it sounds like do source a lot of their product from outside of the country. And the only other thing I would say there is, the only other thing I would close with, and then I'm curious to see what Jamie thinks, is neither, you know, everybody always goes into these arguments thinking, oh, okay, let's give the Supreme Court a bright line and then they're going to love it and they're going to take my argument and I'm going to win. And I just feel like the justices did do a really good job of showing how each argument could kind of had an administrability issue associated with it. And so I really was left at the end, and I'm not as expert on this as Jamie is, but I was left at the end wondering really what they're going to ultimately do, how they're going to resolve this and what tests they might use, or if they're going to create their own tests. So Jamie?
Yeah, actually, let me ask ask you one question about the stream of commerce and the home builders that I'm curious to get your views on. So the reason why I think companies like Ford and other companies, like my clients, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, are concerned about a stream of commerce theory is that certain goods like automobiles and airplanes are not just durable, but they're also inherently mobile. And so a stream of commerce theory will allow, you know, you sell a car in Ohio and then, you know, 30 years and five owners later, it ends up in Michigan. And that can be something that is, you know, unexpected in some ways. Whereas I feel like with things like suppliers of, you know, home building types of products, if you have a manufacturer who is providing wood or some type of home building product to a home builder in Nebraska, there's a direct supplying relationship there. So I'm just curious how the personal jurisdiction test would differ, because there would still be, I feel like under Ford's position, there would still be personal jurisdiction over the drywall company in Nebraska because they sell that product to the home builders directly. But maybe there are more intermediaries along the way, which is where things get complicated.
Well, I do think that is part of the problem is they even referred to them, they referred to intermediary sellers in their brief quite a bit. I think in reading their brief and thinking about it more and also noting your brief that you thought that was awesome in the case, I just think that it may really be a situation where it's more industry specific in how your industry operates. And for whatever reason with the home builders, that is, they are just uniquely feeling like they are the intermediary to get to the big pocket. And they also, again, raise the issue that the big pocket may not even be somebody that could be sold that could be sued in an American court. They could be in a foreign country, and therefore their home builder gets put on the hook. So I do think, I don't want to, I mean, I guess for lack of a better word, I represent home builders and I love their work, but it was more of a self-interested argument probably because it's based on experience they've had. And I just thought, but I did think it did point more broadly just in these civil liability tort reform issues. For the most part, you see the business community aligned, but there are times where it's going to hit different players differently. And this was just one, and quite frankly, one that I didn't expect to see, which I found even more interesting because I just had never heard about that before. And yeah. I've represented small business for a number of years.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of those areas where amicus briefs actually can be very useful. Sometimes it seems like you get, you know, 50 briefs that all say the same thing. But, you know, one thing that I think the justices were preoccupied by about in this argument is that they're going to be making a rule in a case about vehicles that's going to govern small businesses, that's going to govern, you know, all types of different companies and plaintiffs and contexts and, you know, drugs, all kinds of different things. And it is really difficult to fully grasp the impact of that and to make a rule that's workable in all of those situations. So I do think all these amicus briefs are useful. And I think if you see I think we've seen a difference in approach from the court in this case versus the court, what it did in the BMS case, which was about pills. And I think the court's recognizing, oh, wait, you know, we're creating these broad rules and, oh, goodness, it gets a little mucked up in different factual contexts. One thing you mentioned that I definitely agree with is that the court was very focused on fairness. For several of the justices, that was kind of their first and foremost concern. And I think for several justices, if you have a plaintiff that has an in-state injury and an in-state resident, then it doesn't really seem at all unfair to require a large company that operates in all 50 states to have to litigate there, you know, regardless of whether the company engaged in any in-state conduct relating to those particular plaintiffs or their particular vehicles or their particular claims. And I also think it seems pretty clear that some of the justices are a little bit exasperated by the court's personal jurisdiction rules that have evolved over the years. So clearly you have, Ford is engaged in business in all of the relevant states that were linked to vehicles generally. Clearly Ford could anticipate being hailed into court in any of those states based on problems with its vehicles generally. But it's also true that these specific products had no connection to the forum state. And for some justices, I think that seems like a ridiculous display of kind of formalism. It's kind of, you know, using a technicality to deprive individuals of their day in court if they don't have the resources to bring a lawsuit in a different location. And I think that there are some justices that think that the difference between specific and general jurisdiction is supposed to be that if somebody manufactures clocks in Minnesota, for example, you can't, using specific personal jurisdiction, sue them for patent infringement based on a totally different product that is designed and manufactured in a totally different state. There has to be more of a connection, but it's not meant to carve things up claim by claim and individual product by product in the way that Ford's trying to do. And I think that generally speaking, that's not really an irrational position to take. But what I struggle with is what you mentioned at the beginning, which is that type of a position, a kind of broader view of specific jurisdiction, has already been rejected by the Supreme Court in BMS. And, you know, BMS said just because plaintiffs who were sold pills by BMS in California could sue BMS there doesn't mean other people can as well. And you can't just couple it all together and you can't piggyback based on the contacts that exist in a certain state. And so I think it's really hard to square this, the fairness concerns addressed, with all of the case law that's evolved over the last two decades. So I think if the court were writing on a clean state slate, that type of fairness concern would be completely reasonable. But the court isn't writing on a clean slate. And so it's a little hard for me to see how the court could get to a result that would carve this case out from cases like BMS and Walden versus Fiore without actually overruling those cases. And I think it's going to create a lot of confusion if they try to do so.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.